This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
From the ArmeniaProud.com studios,
Genatsit Hayed.
This is A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. A comprehensive look at the Armenian culture, only on lineupmedia.fm.
Genatsit Pai Luisin Spesek. How are you, Chris?
I'm wonderful, Jano. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, we got a big show. Last night, I think it was, like 6 p.m. or something like that. Yeah. I get a message from Mariam, and she's got one of my favorite Armenian soccer players that's going to be on the show
today. Fantastic.
Yura Movesyan. I can't wait to have him on. He played for the Armenian national team.
Yeah.
And now he's playing for an MLS team. We'll catch up with him on that. And he's damn good, too. He's damn good.
That's a big get.
It's a big get. And I tell you what, let's not waste any more time. We've got Anush on. And hey, Anush.
Hello. How are you today?
I am doing great. Chris is fine, too.
Wonderful.
And Anush, fill us in. What's going on in the wine world?
Well, there's lots going on in the wine world. Everything, all good stuff, of course. Today, I wanted to talk a little bit about this question that I get asked a lot. And is there a real difference between a $5 wine and a $30 bottle of wine? And how can you tell, and why is the difference?
Right. Okay.
I would love to know the answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, when you go to the store, you look at the shelves, and there's like a $5 bottle of wine tastes pretty good, and then there's $30, and it's like, is it really that? Like, why is it so much more expensive? Why can't it be everything inexpensive? And like when you taste something that it's made well, there's a big difference between that and the lesser expensive wine. And there's a bunch of elements that go to the price. First of them is the vineyard location. Then it's the labor in the vineyard,
transportation,
winemaking equipment, aging in the barrel, and holding costs. So all of that goes into the bottle of the wine.
I can get that, though, Anush. I'd like to ask you, how do they come up with the years being more better, the better
some
taste
years
or
being more valuable? Or, yeah.
Yeah, I don't get that. Can you fill us in on that one?
So here's that kind of ties in into the vineyard the location and, of course, the weather. So here's the thing, like the best, one of the best wines, and let's keep this example like for the, let's say just California, because, you know, things can be different. The land can be cost different amount. So, for example, in California, the vineyard is, you know, in Napa Valley, let's say, the land is much more expensive than, let's say, in the central California. So that attributes the year, the years one are better than the other depends on the weather. And again, if the location is optimal, you know, if it has, if the vineyard is on the slope, if it has good nutrients, if it has good soil and the microclimate, even if the weather is not that great, the grapes are still going to be good because of the location. Mm-hmm. And that is why that the price of the land is more expensive in that particular area. So that contributes to, you know, why the Napa Valley, let's say Napa Valley, like more precise, Rutherford Hill is more expensive than, let's say, California Cabernet because of that precise location. Mm-hmm. You know, just like the same thing, if you go to a grocery store and you buy like a carton of strawberries and then you go to farmer's market and get a carton of strawberries, which one tastes better and which one is more expensive?
Right. So yeah, you got the market, yeah, you got the organic brand, and you got just the regular. So in sense though, if it tastes the same, if it's still what the consumer can say, you know what, and that's why we have Anush on our show, just to help us, maybe cut cost a little bit on the expensive wines, like $35, $40 a bottle, and go with a $17 wine that's just as good.
Exactly, and there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with a $5 wine either. But if you are, wondering if it's better, yes, it has a little bit more. Like for everyday wine, no one can afford most of the people cannot afford spending $35 per bottle of wine every day. But when you taste it, like I do this blind tasting events where I have from the same location, like let's say from Napa Valley and Cabernet, because if you go into the different countries, then it gets mixed up. But it's California Cabernet, $5, $15, $35, and then $60. And people can generally, they choose as their favorite the ones that are in the mid-range. Mm-hmm. And they know which one is less expensive. And the one that's more expensive, people usually can't really tell, because once you go beyond $50, then it becomes more than
right.
Other factors go into the price of the $100 bottle of wine. It's the followings, yeah, or, the history and et cetera. But typically in that price range, you can tell because of all the facts. Like, for example, the barrel. The barrel, why are the wines that are aged in oak barrels are more expensive than the ones that just had the chips, because some people, the winemakers add, to get the same effect, they add powders or the oak chips, yeah, to give the flavor. One barrel, one oak tree, let's say the French one, and I'll tell you the prices of those two in a moment. You can make two barrels out of an 80-year-old oak tree.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So that's, just two barrels. That's unbelievable. Just two barrels out of a one tree.
And you need a lot of trees.
A French, exactly. A French oak barrel costs somewhere between $1,000 and $3,600.
Wow. Jesus. That's crazy.
Yeah. That adds to the price, but it adds also. So, American, let me go back to this. American oak is between somewhere from 400 to 700. And then Eastern European oak, it's from, again, like it's a little bit less, again, from like 400 to $700. So, and the oak adds extra flavors to the wine, like vanilla, clove, allspice, nutmeg, coconut, almond, all those flavors, when people swirl and they say, oh, this, has a little bit of smokiness. Tobacco, mocha, right, or coconut, etc. All that comes from the advantages of aging the wine in a barrel. So, that adds into the price of the wine.
Yeah, I remember seeing that at Victoria's winery. It was unbelievable, Chris. They were you could probably eat off these things too. These barrels were so clean, yeah. So clean. Everything was so up to par, it's unbelievable. But the thing that I got to run by you guys, and this is I'm going to look pretty damn ignorant here, but I always seem to buy the wine that's got the right labeling, some labeling that catches my eye.
Yeah.
Isn't that a big deal? I just don't want to see a Tom Henry on the thing that says or 2010 or something on it. I like to see something happening in there.
It is the labels are very important, and it also is there's a lot of expense going in. Depending on what they are trying to achieve, there's some labels. There's some wineries that produce a lot of wine, and they separate a bunch of them and they make them into a seasonal label, mm-hmm, or into something catchy that will sell out and then it will die down. Like, let's say like Mommy's Time Out, yep. There was this wine that was so popular and this winery made a bunch of wine and then they labeled some of the wines with that label and it was taking some mom's attention, and it was something fun for them to, you know, take to a party or etc. And the same thing for those. But then there is other wineries who, let's, for example, there is one of the top five first growth in Bordeaux, and this guy that is the Haute Brion, they would have a famous artist design each year their label. It is like a museum collection. So that is, I mean, and the wines are, you know, they start from hundreds of dollars, but they would take that other approach of making their labels into an art. So the labels are very important, and a lot of people do buy the wines based on the label.
Okay, so I'm not the only one.
If you don't know what the wine is, no, of course not. And it's it's a very big part of the marketing and very, you know, like to give explanation. There's on the back of the bottle, there is a lot of times a little story of where the wine came from, a little bit of information, what kind of varietals are in there, which all helps the consumer to buy and make a good decision.
Okay, Anoush, leading to the next question after that. What are the ratings all about? We see a 90, 91, 93, 97. I mean, how much of that do we take as a critic and say, you know what, that's pretty high rated, so I'm going to buy it?
Well, it is a big industry for the rating. And it's at one point, there was like only one guy, Robert Parker, who was giving the ratings. And then, you know, he just liked. There was a lot of criticism coming from him because they would say, oh, he's rating only the high scores, only to the wines that he liked, but it's not necessarily, you know, good or bad thing. And now there's a bunch of other critics who give them, the magazines give their scores. It is a good guide to help you buy the wine if you are unfamiliar. You, let's say you're going to the store and, okay, this is a wine that I haven't had, and they say it's pretty good at this score, so why don't I give it a try? It can be helpful. Sometimes they have, like, the high points under, let's say, 90-point wines under $15. So you know that they went through the they took the time and they tasted a bunch of wines which were under $15, and then they rated the best ones from them. You can take their suggestion. Why not? But then again, it's your own. It comes to your own preference, to your own liking. You know, if you like it, you agree with them. If you don't like it, you know, it doesn't mean that you are wrong. You know, it's a personal taste.
How do they come up with that number, though? Let's say if it's 91. Is it just one person? You said no, there's other critics now, or people that rate these. Are there like four or five of them, and then they average it together, or how's that come up?
For the magazines, I think they average it together, but let's say it's the Robert Parker review, it's just one person.
Okay.
James Suckling is
not
only
fair.
One person.
That's really not fair. Because,
I know.
Yeah, he may not like that taste. There's wine that my wife likes that I just can't drink, and now I'm Tom Parker saying I don't like that, and I'm going to rate it low because I don't like it.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And that's why a lot of wineries do not want their wines rated. You know, some wineries do send it for their ratings. They send the wines for those people to rate. But the winery that I worked for, Kent Rasmussen in Napa, outstanding wine, he never had his wines rated. He's one of the oldest producers in Napa Valley, makes outstanding, you know, estate Pinot Noir, but his wines, I haven't seen his Rasmussen. I mean, I have, maybe it was at some point, but I haven't seen it rated. And he was like, you know what we are doing? You know, the people are the judges. We have our followers. They buy, they love it. And so, you know, but then again, I'm not totally against it. There's some people who are completely against the rating, but yes, it can affect them in a positive and a very negative way because, you know, you spend all this time and made it, and then it's ranked as 75, and then you see all the other wines are 80,
and this has to be
and 90.
And this has to be voluntarily rated. I mean, he can't take my bottle and say, "Now I'm going to rate this bottle." It has to be presented to him or something like that.
I am not sure. I think so. Maybe, I don't know, but I can check on that.
And why I ask that? Why I ask that, Amish? What if it's a wine company that's, you know, they've broken away from this Tom guy and they just went on to all these other critics. Well, this one entity here is now not very happy because there's other competition. He can't just grab their wine and just give it a 70 or a 60 or something like that when the wine's 90, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it shouldn't come to, like, personal, you know, rivalry or fight, because then it would get ugly, which I don't think it would. But other critics are... There is a lot of, like, magazines who would rate the same wines, and everybody can come up with their own, because you'll see, like, nice. Wine Spectator rated as 92, you know, Food and Wine rated is at 93, and then this other guy rated it. So there is a range. And then sometimes, like, in the stores, they'll have, like, the picks of the people who work there. It's like, let's say, this guy's favorite pick. It's a good guide to know that the wine is, you know, to try. But then at the same time, you know, you can absolutely disagree with their rating.
Right, right.
But that, if the rating is high, that would drive also sometimes the price to get higher. And then because people would start buying it more, and then they will raise the price.
Mm-hmm. Well, wouldn't you want less of that wine for the price to be up instead of so much quantity of it? The volume, if you got too much volume.
Some wineries do that. They will, you know, even though the demand would be high, they would not make more of it just to keep the exclusivity. And then they will make whatever the excess grapes they have in the years that they have more grapes. They will make it something else or sell it to other producers, mm-hmm. but they will not increase their production because they want to keep their prices higher and exclusivity too.
I got you.
So there's a lot of,
All right. What do you got for us this week on the wine? Which wine should we try to get out of the shopping cart?
Exactly. So because it's a special weekend coming up, the Mother's Day, and give a little bit of extra. So today's wines are going to be a little bit more expensive than the ones that I have recommended previously, but great value.
Uh-huh.
So for a brunch, if someone is doing brunch, go with a champagne, like a champagne from Champagne region. And because in the morning you don't typically drink a lot, I mean, mostly, you don't want to get mom too much champagne, just go for the half bottles. So any champagne house, like a half a bottle of champagne would be around $30. So and I'll have my favorite picks. For the white, I would suggest to go with a French Chardonnay, which is called Burgundy. His name is Guy Amiot, and the wine is around $40. But it's absolutely good treat for a mom.
So that's a French name? That's a French name? Does it have a year behind it?
Yes, it's 2014.
2014. Okay, that's the white wine.
And then for the white wine. And then for the red, I was at a wine tasting for Spanish wines last week. And now this is one exception to those, to the pricing. This wine is a red wine from Rioja, Gran Reserva, one of the top levels that they can have. And it's only around $35. But it is the type of wine, if it was made, let's say, in California, would be like $150 or more. So $30 red, it's Faustino Gran Reserva. And the year that they had was 2004. Absolutely great. I had a chance to get one and then bring it and you know, have it at the dinner. And both my mom and my husband, they were like, wow, this is amazing. It was really good. And the best part is that it's, yes, it's higher than, you know, in the teens. It's around 35, but it's so worth it. So,
wow, that's great. I love that review. I love that review. That's great. All right. So are you going to your family's are you going to mom's house, or how are we going to do this for Mother's Day?
Yes. Well, actually, I just came back from school celebrating it with my younger son. They had something special for moms, the teachers and the kids. They sang us the sweetest song. So on Sunday, we're getting together with my mom lives with me. So my mom and my husband's mom. So we're all going to get together, have a nice lunch and dinner together. And so have a good
God
time.
God bless. Have a good time, Anush. And we'll talk to you next week. I think we're going to get one of these days, we're going to have to all have a show together here or in L.A. or something. That would be great.
That would be fun.
In L.A. Yeah. Come on over. We'll have nice food with Mariam and wine. And we'll have a great time.
And you know what? Some of the food that Mariam throws out there, I really try to make. And I brought some to Chris's house, and he loved it. He loved it. I made some. Yeah.
That was fantastic.
Yeah. Anyway, Anush, we'll talk to you next week. Take care.
All right. Have a good day. Bye.
You too. Bye. Well, that was Anush. And you know what? Just to follow Anush right now, how great would it be to get Mariam on the phone?
Oh,
get
that
thing rolling too, because she's going to have the food. We just had the wine. Yep. The wine's out there. Now the food's getting prepared, you might say.
Absolutely.
Mariam, how are you?
Good, John. How are you guys?
We are doing great.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And we just got a wine session with our Anush, and she gave us the white wine, red wine for Mother's Day. What do you got for us for this whole fiesta? Festive.
Festive.
This festive moment with our moms.
Well, I love brunch, so especially with Mother's Day.
That's what she said.
Brunch.
Yeah, that's what. Maybe we ought to take ours to brunch.
I always love brunch.
Okay.
I think moms like brunch. Yeah, Mother's Day brunch is perfect, and you can do a lot with that. You know, you can mix your breakfast and kind of lunch together. My favorite thing to do with brunch is breakfast pizza or brunch pizza.
Brunch pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can either buy the dough ready. Even, you know, Trader Joe's have a ready rolled out dough. You can just buy that or you can make yours. It's very simple. I'm not going to give the ingredients or the measurements because I don't have it in hand, but you can definitely YouTube or even Harina has a show that she actually demonstrates how to make the pizza. But it's very simple. It's just water, yeast, and actually flour and salt.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not up to it, you can definitely buy ready-made dough. And then what I like to do, I like to make I like to bake it in a 500-degree oven. And once it's done, the bread is done, then you take almost done, not halfway done, you take it out, you put the cheese on top, and you pop it back into the oven until it's melted. And then you can actually top it off with your eggs. And the eggs that I make is, when you take it out, after you take it out, is sunny side up. The way I make it is actually, I crack the eggs in a nonstick pan, mm-hmm. and then I add a little bit of boiling water all around the pan, not on the top. And then I cover it with the lid, and I just let it sit until you see that white covering the yolk, and the white part is all set. And then you kind of cut it up and you put it on your pizza. Then you just top it off with prosciutto and then shaved, the Parmesan cheese. Shaved Parmesan cheese and arugula.
What was that? An arugula? Is that
arugula?
Yeah,
arugula.
Is that the type of cheese?
No, arugula is a type of salad mix or herb, I guess. Yeah, it's Italians use it a lot. Armenians use it a lot. It's like I don't know. It's little bit peppery.
Okay, so it's a leaf.
Ryan will know. Yeah, it's like a it's like spinach, but it's not spinach. It's very similar to, I don't even know what it is similar to. You've never had arugula.
No, no, he's pulling it up right now on the big screen so I can see what this is.
Okay, I mean that's optional,
yes,
of course.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, I didn't know it was called that. I'm going to take a lot of heat for this one. But no, I didn't know what that was. But now I do. I know what that is. You know what I picture that as? Overgrown type of parsley. Huh? Something like that?
Yeah,
no,
sort of,
no, forget it. Forget it. All right, so you put the arugula in there. You know what, though, Mariam? There's another Armenian thing like that. And they make it with dough, and they make a, like a bottom part of a ship. That size, that shape,
yeah.
And then they
it's
have. What is it?
Yeah, it's called Ajavsky, and that's it's not an Armenian dish, but it is sort of a Georgian.
Yeah, that's what they said. It was a Georgian dish when I was in Armenia, and my God, that was delicious too.
Yeah, that's actually, I make that too, except the dough for that, you have to make it yourself because you have to kind of shape it into like a canoe.
Yeah, canoe.
And then, yeah, and then you kind of put that in the oven. Once it's done a little bit, you take it out, you put the cheese, and then you crack the egg at the end.
Wow, that's
delicious. That's going to take a little bit more, yeah, but it is very delicious. I make that too.
So when you say that you guys do brunch, is this somewhere that you folks go to? You don't do brunch at home.
Right? I'm going to actually host brunch this Mother's
Day.
Oh, nice. But sometimes, with the girls, we take our moms, like cousins, we get together, we take our moms out for brunch. Dinner, sometimes we do dinner, but not for the moms, actually, for dads mostly. We do Father's Day barbecue.
Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need it too. We need a little love too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then actually, I have a cocktail to go with this.
You're kidding. Now you got cocktails going.
No. Yeah, it's actually mimosa, but I'm doing this mimosa differently, not traditional one. I add about 1/8 of a cup strawberry lemonade.
Uh huh.
And then juice of 1 orange, fresh orange.
Mm hmm.
And then I add a little bit, actually depends how much you want. It's up to you. You can add either a shot or less than a shot of orange liqueur. And then I top it off a little bit with a Blue Moon beer.
Mm. Wow.
And then on top, I add really dry sparkling wine.
See, I can't do all that. And I'll tell you why. Because as soon as I like it, they're all going to want one. And when I have all these people, and that seems like a big headache for me to make these, hear this, hear that, forget all that. If you make that, you better just sneak off into the other room with it. Because every time,
yeah. You want to make that for your wife only in the morning, maybe.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's like there's so much going on that you don't need more than one or maybe two in the morning or in afternoon.
Yeah.
So what?
So you're going to have people over at your house this weekend?
Yeah, I'm inviting my mom and my mother-in-law, and I'm going to do a brunch for them.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, you guys have a great time, and Anush threw in the red, the white, and you've got our food set up. Look, Chris, I'm actually, my mouth just watered thinking about this.
It's the full package.
Full package. We got the wine. We got the food. We're set. All right, Mariam, you take care, and thank you so much for being patient. We had that whole thing with another episode going off with another group, and thanks a lot, guys. You guys make this show possible.
Not a problem. Thank you, and happy Mother's Day to your wife.
Yes, to my wife. Okay, yeah. All right. Thank you, Mom, from upstairs. All right, see ya.
All right, bye.
Bye. Okay, folks. I guess this is the moment I've been waiting for a while. No offense here, Anush or Mariam. I love your segments here. You know I love the food and the wine, so I'm not going to lie there. But the big guest that, I've been looking forward to interviewing this guy for a while now, and that's because he played for the Armenian national team, and now he's in the MLS, and he's making things happen here. He's making a lot of noise, and that is Yura Movisyan. Yura, how are you?
Good, good. How are you guys?
We are doing good here. We are doing good. And, man, I tell you what, I've been trying to get you for the longest time, and you're one of my favorite players. When you were playing over there, it was like you guys looked so good together. Everyone played so well together. Now you're in the MLS. How has that been a little different playing in the MLS league than Russia and Armenia?
Well, I mean, for me, I started in MLS, so it was great to have the experience in Russia. It was great to have the experience, get to play for the national team, but I'm extremely happy being back in MLS.
Right. And do you see the difference between the MLS and the Russian league?
Well, yeah, you do see differences, but it's not a very big difference. You know, when you take out two or three clubs from Russia, the rest are pretty fairly even with MLS teams.
Okay. All right. Now, you played for the Armenian team, and my God, man, you guys brought a lot of excitement, a lot of excitement. Everyone was really – I think that was our first time in a long time before I was maybe before I was even born, but you guys just seemed to bring excitement. Did you just feel it in Armenia?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know, we were young. We had a very good team, good group of guys. So it was fun being, you know, going over there and having all the success.
You know, I remember, was it the Denmark game that you guys just completely – you went to their house and you tore down their house. What was it, like 5-0?
4-0.
Yeah, I don't want to make it any worse. 4-0. But Jesus Christ, that was unbelievable, man. I think you had a goal in that game, didn't you?
I had two goals.
Two goals. Bravo, man. Two goals. I remember one of them. It like went to the left corner and he dove and nothing doing. You buried it.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. But both of them were pretty good goals. One of them was actually 28 seconds into the game. So.
Oh, you know what? That's got to be such a motivating goal. Getting the early goal like that makes you feel so much more better.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, you're playing against Denmark. You're playing against a big nation. You know, big soccer nation. So. To get a goal and to beat them 4-0 in their home, it was pretty special.
Now, do you guys ever, while you're playing, just go through the internet and troll that whole area of FIFA ranking? Did you guys ever do that, just to look where you stand?
Well, I've never done it. I mean, you usually get it on your news feed or
news, Facebook.
You know, it comes up. Yeah, Facebook or just in anything, you know. Every couple of months, you know, you get the rankings out and everybody starts writing about it. So you don't need to go through it because it's already there.
Yeah, definitely. I never understood that too, by the way. You'd see one week where we're number 32 and we didn't even play a damn game and now we've dropped to 39. And I'm like, what the hell just happened? I don't know what the hell just happened, but we just dropped.
The rankings are a bit different. You know, every ranking, every organization is different how they count. You know, like in soccer, they always count like a year back. You know, like what you did last year, that's what they go off of, the rankings and stuff. So it's a bit different, you know.
Yeah, it really is much more than football because now the Armenian national team I just checked them out, and like 2 weeks later, they've jumped 18 spots, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's you win one, you tie one, and then you make a big jump, and at the same time, you lose one, you go down a lot.
Now, what team are you playing for here in the MLS?
Real Salt Lake.
How you guys been doing?
Well, we've had a little bit of struggles this year early on, but it's still a long season, so we'll get things going.
You know, that's one thing I've always admired professional players about is you go through the struggle But yet you still got to stay optimistic. Always stay optimistic. You may get beat by that team 2-0 and then turn around and win 2-1. And it's just amazing how the brain function of you guys in being baseball, being football, even soccer, how you guys do that. How you guys just say, you know what, I got to wave it off.
Well, I mean, it's part of being a professional soccer player where, you win and you lose. But at the same time, just because you lose, it doesn't mean you become a bad player. You don't forget what you have, your talent and your work rate. So it's, on any given day, anybody can beat anybody.
Right.
And it's just about responding in a positive way and, just going after it for the next game.
Right. So you guys are right now in Boston, I heard?
Yeah. We're in Boston right now. We play tomorrow.
You're going to have some fans there because we've got a lot of Armenians in Boston.
Yeah, I know. There's a big Armenian community here.
Yeah. And you know what? I got a
diaspora.
Yeah. God, the show goes out on Monday, but man, I would have loved to promote the show, the game. Hell, our fans would have been there with the Yerak Queen all over the place, man. But, you gave up. Did you? Now, are you done with the Armenian national team?
Well, I mean, it's a little complicated
right
now. But I think soon enough I'll be done, and, so we'll see. But at the moment, I am done with the national team.
Wow. And you know what? However you moved on, and we still love you, man. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
You
brought a lot of excitement. Let me go back to one particular game that, as an Armenian, I mean, it just seemed like this is how our life has been. This is us. And that was when our goalie against Ireland. Now, we win that game. We're going to Euro. We're going to be representing Armenia in Europlay, and this and the write-ups. I don't care about the Armenian write-ups. I went to the Irish write-up, and they were talking so much about you and the other players on the team, and it was so beautiful because they were saying like, this team is equipped to beat the hell out of us. I mean, they're powerful. Yeah. They can score at will. And I was buying into it and everything. And then all of a sudden, when our goalie, they said, had a hands, he touched the ball. He was outside the box. And we got a penalty for that and a red flag. And we didn't play the same after that, man. And what's your call on that?
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult. We win that game. That's the last game. We had outscored any team. We just had a great. That was our first qualification group stages, and going into Ireland, it was up to us to get a win, and we would go through. But I think we got caught. We got very unlucky with that same referee and with Ireland being kicked out of the qualification 2 years before that with the unfair call against France. And I think that was their revenge. Yeah, that was their revenge, and, getting a bad call for them instead of going against them 2 years ago. And we didn't get lucky there. But, it was just all in all, obviously it was extremely disappointing. But to get to that point and to score all those goals that we scored, that's something Armenia had never done. And I feel proud that, after I went there, we had all the success.
I think we were like under 25 on that one. We were in the rankings below 25. I mean, that was our best run right there, and people were starting to really notice us. And right afterwards, the game's over, and we never recovered. I don't know what it was, but we never got that caliber again. Would you agree on that, or?
No. I mean, obviously, that was a difficult pill to swallow. That was extremely difficult, but you know, we did it pretty good. We got very close to the next qualifiers too.
Right.
The World Cup qualifiers. We got pretty close to it, and again, we didn't get lucky with a few injuries, but it was again a good qualification group for us. We had a much tougher group. You know, the World Cup in 2000, for the 2014 World Cup, we had a much more difficult, you know, group. But at the same time, it was just one of those things that, you know, a lot of teams already knew who we were and kind of figured out the way we were playing. So things got a bit more difficult. It's not like we took a step back. I think everybody.
No. And I didn't mean it like that. I know
what you mean. I just, we didn't, you know, soccer is that, you know, like that. And it always evolves. It always gets better. And,
yeah,
you know, players get better. And, you know, you, when a surprise team comes up and a team is surprising everybody, you know, a lot of people pay attention and start, you know, start learning about that team and start watching a lot of film, right, and start, you know, understanding how they got there. So they you know, they can fight against it, and they did the next qualifying stage. So
right. Do you see down the line, do you see American Armenians like you right now in Salt Lake? Do you see it when you go to LA or to the East Coast? I'm sure you run into the youth of Armenians as well. And do you see any promise in the future coming out of the diaspora to Armenia?
Well, honestly, I mean, I haven't heard of anybody that, you know, people would talk about that, you know, is on the path. But listen, this is, you know, it's something that it's not as easy as people think. You know, this is a country of 300 million people. So to become a professional, to make it pro,
right,
it's a little harder than people think. So,
no.
But I do think, you know, I do believe that, you know, with the knowledge that we have now, with the kids and the opportunities kids have now, I think we will see. And, you know, that's one of my goals after my playing career is to, you know, to have an academy for mainly our kids down in West Coast in LA to hopefully help them get to where I am and hopefully even higher.
Excellent, excellent, brother. And do you have any ambition to open anything like that in Armenia as well?
Well, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of teams and clubs and, you know, opportunities in Armenia. So I think that for me right now, it's mostly about the U.S. and about L.A. and West Coast, and hopefully we can expand. But, you know, if I create something really good, and not, it's not going to be about quantity, it's going to be about quality. So, you know, that's kind of one of my goals.
Great, great. Hey, you're by the way, I had, and I still have it in my office, you like a gladiator. It's like a poster. I got a poster of you on my office there. It's great, man. You look like a real badass, and we loved the moment, man. We loved everything that you guys brought to the table. Hopefully, you'll get your MLS. So you're sluggish right now, your team, but you're still in the playoff picture.
Well, I mean, it's way too early to talk about playoffs.
Oh, I, you know, see, I didn't know.
26 games, 25 games.
So, oh, okay.
So
what the hell am I saying?
Way too early to talk about playoffs.
Yeah,
but, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, this is,
excellent.
This is pretty common in MLS because it's such a long season. So, you know, and then we switch coaches. So that's another difficult thing to go through, you know, when you switch coaches early on in the season. And now we're you know, it's just about getting used to the new coach and figuring out what to do.
And that plays a big role, isn't it? Armenia had the same thing. We had coaches left and right. We're getting new coaches shifting in and all that. I mean, that has to erupt the play.
No, of course.
I mean, it doesn't always one likes to pass it 3-4 times. The other one wants to break away. I mean, it's really hard to get things down like that, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, it's extremely difficult.
Yeah.
When you, you know, it's just about a relationship. You know, you got to get used to them. You got to learn, you know,
just
learn
adapt.
The tendencies and adapt. Yeah. So it's it could take a while.
Yeah. Well, man, I wish we had an MLS team in St. Louis. Our people here voted it down, but I couldn't wait to see you come here. Couldn't wait to see possibly a friendly with the Armenian national team. I mean, it's stuff like that, you know, it just goes through your head. And I know, does it motivate you if you would come to a city like St. Louis in the middle of the United States and you see people waving the Yerach Queen? I mean, does that somehow fire you up a little bit?
Of course, man. Yep. Of course, it's always extremely nice, you know, to see our flag everywhere in the U.S. You know, and I see it almost in every city I go to and I play. You know, recently I was in Minnesota, and in Colorado, where I saw a lot of Armenian flags. That's, you know, it's extremely nice, and I feel very proud because, you know, soccer is one way, sports is one way to bring people together and, you know, make people happy and let people get away from their daily lives and struggles or successes, you know.
Right. Which leads me to one of my last questions here. When you've seen your fans in, like, France or Germany and in Denmark, I mean, it had to be so much pride just to see them sitting there and or standing there and they're holding the flag, and it's gotta motivate you a little bit.
Oh, of course it does motivate us a lot. It motivates me a lot because, you know, we work extremely hard to get to where we are, and, you know, we every day it's a lot tougher than people think. You know, just an hour a day, it's a lot more than that. You know, our job is 24 hours a day, and we have to constantly be working and taking care of ourselves and thinking and, you know, learning. So it, you know, when you put that type of work in, that type of dedication, and then, you know, the rewards are, you know, to see people out cheering for you, and to see, you know, fans and people that love the game come out and support you. You know, they don't have to do that. They do it because they show you respect and appreciation. And obviously for us, that's our number one, you know, payoff for our hard work.
Right. Right. I tell you what, keep up your great success, my friend. You still got a lot of fans everywhere. I got one fan that, from Argentina, Ger Haguzian. He's our soccer guy, and he gives us the whole scoop, and all he does is praise you and how good you play.
Oh, I appreciate it. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, so you know what? You may be in Salt Lake, where we don't see anybody in Salt Lake, but we always think of you, and we're always wishing the best. And I know I'm going to take a lot of heat from my listeners about the playoff picture and me asking about playoff, and we've got 26, 28 games left. But you know what? I haven't been following schedule. I was going to say contract. Yeah, the schedule. I haven't followed the schedule at all. But again, we wish you nothing but the best. You're a friend of the show. If there's anything that ever pops up that you're coming to a certain area or whatever, we'd love to get our fans out there.
Yeah, definitely. I was actually last weekend. I was in Kansas City. So
Kansas City, you're 4 or 5 hours away. You would have come to the east a little bit here. I had kebabs ready for you.
Yeah. I wish. I mean,
yeah,
really, but don't have the time. But appreciate it. Thank you.
Anytime. Thanks anytime. If you ever come into St. Louis, you got to look. Look us up, and we'll definitely show you a good time here.
I will.
All right, Yura. Take care, my friend. Nice having you on.
Thank you. Thanks.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Well, folks, that's our show for this week. And I tell you what, thank you so much, Mariam, for getting our guests here. Yura Movisyan. I've wanted him for a while, and what a great interview. The guy felt real comfortable with my questions. I didn't say, who's this, what's this guy, or anything like that. And that's what it's all about. We're a team here, team effort. That's what we're doing here. And Yura, thank you for being on our show. Thank you, my friends, for listening to another great episode on Armenia Proud. Genatsa Kishepari. I will see you next week.
Tune in next week for another episode of A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. Find the show online at armeniaproud.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation at facebook.com/armeniaproud or Twitter at armeniaproud. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.